Hi, good afternoon, folks. Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, Law Office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. Today is May 24, 2012. This is a community conference call that's being recorded. By participating in this call, you do not become our clients, nor do we become your lawyers. This is purely an informational call. Note that, as I said, this call is being recorded, so if you wish to keep your identity confidential, please do so. You can make up a name or not talk at all. The call will be made publicly available. That said, let me go on to the questions that have been already posted. I don't expect this to take long. So the first question is from Mr. Joshi, Rahul Joshi. He says, my wife's legal name has not been changed after we got married. So the name on the passport and all the other documentation is the same as it was at the time of her birth certificate. Is this a problem? And the answer is, of course not. For example, even President Clinton's wife, I think she was either for the longest time known as Hillary Rodham, and then she changed it to Hillary Rodham Clinton, so she kept her maiden name. That's a very common thing to do in USA. The fact that husband and wife both have different last names is absolutely no problem. Another migrant says, H-1B transfer, AC-21 portability with future employer. I am on H-1B, filed 485, which has been pending for 2.5 months. Got EAD-AP combo for 1 year. Wife is going to start work with EAD. She's on H-4. I'm under EB-2. Job requires master's plus 2 years, etc., etc. I have overall experience of 8+ years. I want to explore for senior level positions like architect, project manager with another organization after 6 months of 485 filing. If future company is ready to sponsor H-1B and continue AC-21, can I maintain H-1B EAD with the future employer? You've given me a lot of facts, Shri, but I'm not quite clear about what it is that you are focusing on. Are you focusing on the fact that the job will go from being senior software developer to architect or project manager? Or are you concerned about AC-21 in general? I'm not so sure exactly what your question is, but I'm assuming what you're asking me is this. Look, I have a job, an EB-2 job that I'm doing right now as a senior software developer. Can I port over to another company after 180 days of 485 pending? I-140 is already approved, but the job title would be either architect or project manager, which is a slightly senior level position. Can I do that? And the answer is, that depends. We have to look at the two jobs next to each other, because remember the language used in AC-21 is that the jobs must be same or similar. Same or similar. Obviously, the use of the two words together means the jobs can be slightly different. How slightly different, nobody knows. The broadest reading of this is that as long as you are, if you're an IT professional and you're working in IT, we don't care what you do. Another reading is the jobs have to be as close to each other as possible. My reading is the basic nature of the job should remain the same. That's the most conservative thing, I think. And even if the technologies are a little bit different, for example, if you go from Java to .NET, I think that's okay. Okay? So I would look at the essential nature. So your question is, can I maintain H-1B and EAD with future employer? The answer is yes, but can you do an AC-21? That depends upon whether or not the two jobs are similar, and that's a question left best to the lawyers who are going to represent you. What are the options to maintain H-1B and EAD with the future employer? Actually, there is really no other option. I mean, doing an H-1B transfer, and before you do that, make sure that the jobs are substantially similar, and then we are good to go. Okay? Next question is from Sweta, and this is also a common problem, and I'm very sad to see that there are employers out there. Fortunately, we don't know a lot of them. Maybe companies like that don't stick with us too long, where they don't give any information to the employee. I mean, we have a situation where she does not even know what her job description was. So if she wants to do an AC-21, she has no idea how to do that. Well, Shweta, one thing you can do is you can file a Privacy Act request, a Privacy Act request. If you go to the forms page on USCIS.gov site and do a search for FOIA, F-O-I-A, Freedom of Information Act, a form will pull up. It's the same form that is used for Privacy Act. You'll file a request asking the government for duplicate copies of all the information they have on you. You might be able to get a copy of your 9089 that way. Okay? In many states, lawyers, such as in Virginia, lawyers are required to furnish a copy if the individual clients ask for them. So also check whoever the lawyer for your company was, whether if they are admitted in New York, call the New York bar, find out what the lawyer's obligations are. I'll tell you what our obligations under Virginia law are. Our obligation is both the employer and the employee are entitled to the whole file equally, okay? If the employer wants us to represent only the employer and divulge no information to the employee, we have to get a waiver in writing from the employee that says, I will not ask you for any documentation. I understand you don't represent me. You only represent my employer. If I don't have such a waiver, I am obligated by law to provide a copy to the employee. So check if your lawyer who represented your company is also bound by the same, similar kind of ethics. How do you do that? You figure out where they are admitted to practice law. You call the bar, okay, and you find out what their obligations towards you are. So now I look at your question. It says, my questions are, as I just know the job title and salary, can I file for AC21 portability? And the answer is probably not. You should have the job description. That's very, very important. Can I file for AC21 without my current employer knowing? Yes. Can my current employer revoke I-140? Yes. But after 180 days, if you have a similar job, that will not affect the pending 485. For AC21, should salary be the same or can it be even lesser? That's a tricky question. How much lesser? Where are you going to be working? Obviously, if the job that you were getting certified for was in San Francisco, which is a high salary area, and the job you are moving to is in Little Rock, Arkansas, there the salaries are going to be lesser anyway. So there's a lot of variables here. But if everything else is the same and the salary is too far below what was the original salary on the labor cert, you could have a problem. Okay? Salary could be lesser, but it depends upon the circumstances. And your fifth question I've already answered. Is there a way I can obtain a copy of my perm? Two ways. Your lawyer and Privacy Act / FOIA request. Imi_image said, change of state while 485 is pending. My I-485 is pending. Working for the same employer, same position, but different state. Is that okay? What are the risks? Well, that depends. We have to look at your form 9089, ETA 9089. Okay? There are two situations in which you will be safe. Let's say the 9089 clearly says, the company is headquartered in Colorado, but the job requires relocation to various places. In that case, no problem. If the 9089 does not say that, and it was processed, let's say, from Colorado, and the company moves you to California, okay, the green card can be taken away if there is no possibility that you will come back to Colorado. So if the employer is willing to relocate you back to Colorado, where the labor cert was filed through, upon approval of your green card or even earlier, the green card can still go on. So, change of state would not affect your 485 or your green card if one of the two things exists. One, your labor cert, which is ETA 9089, allows for it. And two, if the employer is willing to move you back. Next question, Amipal. New H-1B query. Entered USA on H-4. Okay. H-1B from employer A has been filed in April this year. We don't know the status. If A can place somewhere in the U.S., how soon can I do it? I think you're talking about changing status, yes. So the first question is, can I change status from H-4 to H-1B within USA? Yes, you can. You do not have to go back to India for stamping. You should be able to change status within USA. If I go back to India, get my H-1B stamped, would I be able to have both H-4 and H-1B visas? Normally, no. Normally, no. But if for some reason they decline your H-1B and they have canceled your H-4, you can apply for H-4 again right away. Okay? So if you want to come back on H-4 visa, and let's say they've canceled your H-4 visa before they took your H-1B application, which they're supposed to do, but they often don't do that. If they don't cancel H-4 and just deny your H-1, of course you can use the H-4 visa and come back. But if they have canceled the H-4, then you can just reapply for it right away. In the worst case scenario, if my current employer A in India is not able to get me some U.S. assignment, then what are the chances of being in U.S. merely with the approved petition and getting it transferred? Remember, if you have an H-1 approval, you will continue to be in H-1 status unless there is a change of status. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. If you have an H-1 approval, but not H-1 status, which means an EY-94 through the H-1, then you are still in H-4. And in order for you to convert to H-4, you either have to have this employer file for a change of status or a new employer file for an H-1 transfer and a change of status. They can do that at the same time. You are not subject to the quota. Okay? So the transfer is possible. Being on H-4, any other way I can work in USA? No, you cannot. The ultimate intention is to continue with this job by avoiding long leave period and join my wife in USA. I'm not sure I understand that last part, but this is the way your situation pans out. Your status can be changed by employer A. If they don't change the status, you are not on H-1, you're on H-4. Another employer can sometime later file for your H-1 transfer and change of status to H-1. Next question, Pradeep D. RFE on 3-year degree. Listen, since 2000 October, I want to say 2000, maybe it's 2005, about 8 or 9 years, USCIS has approved very, very few cases where you have a 3-year bachelor's degree. And they have always created a problem with Indian 3-year degree. So chances of getting a 3-year degree based EB2 classification are extremely small, if not impossible. So if I were you, first thing is you should get a second opinion. Make sure that your case cannot be saved some other way. Be prepared to refile and go through the whole thing all over again. It does not look to me like this case can survive simply because it's a 3-year degree case. Joy 3344. Perm filing by another company and porting priority date. Current employer will begin perm in 6 to 9 months. I'm trying to figure out, can I get GC process through another company? Yes. Can I do so? You can. Without actually working for them? Yes. As long as there's a good faith intention on part of the company to hire you sometime in the future and for you to join them sometime in the future, you can. Later, can I port the priority date to my current employer? Yes, you can. Interesting thing is, as long as you have the good faith intention when the labor cert is filed through the future employer, let's say you file a labor cert to the future employer, labor cert gets approved a year later, somewhere along the line, let's say 8 months earlier or 4 months earlier, the employer that you're currently working for has already started your green card as well. But you have the earlier priority date from the future company 8 months ago. When the future company's I-140 gets approved, you can actually transfer the priority date to your current employer's case, which will give you 8 months leg up, and that's perfectly legal. Poor H-1 boy, he's got a problem. What happened with him was they submitted the wrong evidence or wrong response to the RFP on 485. What do we do now? We have some incorrect information. Well, what you do is immediately contact the USCIS customer service, explain to them the problem. Your lawyer should be doing this. At the same time, FedEx a correction or addendum to whatever has been sent to the USCIS as well. And that should take care of it. This has happened to us once, quite a few years ago, and this is exactly how we handled it. So it's not a big problem. As long as you act fast. Also remember, if the case gets denied, you can file a motion to reopen the 485 and provide the evidence or the correction that you were unable to do so. But that's why waste that time? Might as well do it right away. Okay? Well, folks, these are all the questions that were posted. Now, go ahead. Any questions you folks have, press 5-star on your phone. Press 5-star. 5-star. I have one question, two questions. 5-star on your phone. Okay, two questions so far. 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, my God. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 people have their hands up. Okay, no problem. We have enough time. I'm going to start with in the order people logged in. So the first hand up was from somebody who logged in at 12:26 p.m. Eastern Time. Let's start with just 1 second. This is area code 786. 786. Go ahead, sir, ma'am.
Hi, Rajiv. This is in follow-up with the question number 4 about the AC21 with limited available information.
Yes, Shweta, right?
Yes. So you had mentioned about me getting it from a lawyer, right? Mm-hmm. The problem is I don't think you had mentioned about me getting a copy of labor from my lawyer
mm-hmm.
who filed for the perm. Mm-hmm. But the problem is I don't think it was filed by a lawyer. It was filed by my employer.
Okay. Then file the FOIA request, okay?
Okay.
I'm trying to rack my brain, trying to think if there is a public information file of some kind that you can access. Let me think about this. When we do the perm application, actually, let me walk over to Sumanji's office. Let me run this by mm-hmm. Sumanji or some of the other people in the firm. I'll just walk over and ask them. Sumanji's not here. Fez, where is Sumanji? Okay. Nobody here? Everybody's out to lunch? Okay. All right. Well, people are not here. Shweta, do me a favor. Just mm-hmm. send me an email through the contact us form. Okay?
Okay.
People are at lunch here. Everybody was here just a minute ago, but I think they've all walked out. So what you do is just send me an email through the contact us form and say, Rajiv, we talked about the issue of getting a job description on my AC21.
Mm-hmm.
Can you please contact me and let me know if there is any other possibility of doing that, okay? So what I'll do is I'll check with my team members and see if there's any stage at which we had to make some documentation so public that it can be easily
mm-hmm.
obtained, okay?
Okay.
So contact us form, or you can just send me an email directly to help@immigration.com.
I'm sorry, what was that? Help.
Help.
Okay.
@immigration.com. Okay, and just send me an email. I'll check with my team and make sure your phone number is there. I'll have somebody call you back. Okay?
Okay, that sounds great. I have a couple more questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
So you were talking about the FOIA, right? FOIA.
Mm-hmm.
How long would that take, like if I requested that to get the information?
Typically 2-3
months.
Yeah, typically 2-3 months. Actually, there was a lawsuit the government just lost a couple of days ago
mm-hmm.
where the courts have said you must respond to FOIA requests within 60 days.
Okay. Okay, and will the employer know about it?
No.
Will they notify the employer?
No, they should not.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right,
Rajiv. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, I am going on to area code 408. 408. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Rajiv. This is Pradeep here.
Hi, Pradeep. What's up?
Hey, this is for that EB-2 with a 3-year degree.
That's very difficult, my friend. That's going to work out. Yeah.
Because my attorney was telling me that, you know, we can try. I first submitted 1 3-year to 4-year evaluation from another.
Is that Elzing?
Yeah, Sheila, exactly.
I don't think we have ever won a case with any of Sheila's evaluations so far.
Okay. Is there, because even my attorney was telling the same, but is there any other evaluator that you have?
It's not a question of evaluation. Sheila does a very good job. She's done a very well-researched paper on this.
Yeah, yeah.
First CIS will not accept it.
Okay. So my RFE respondent is by August. What is the best case scenario that you think like can happen?
Pradeep, I think you need definitely a second opinion.
Okay.
Whether from me or from another lawyer in the same firm, if the firm is big enough, they can have another more senior lawyer look at the case and give you some advice. It looks to me that you are fighting a losing battle.
Okay.
You need to have an exit strategy, whether it involves filing a response, then filing an appeal, so that your H-1 keeps getting extended, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it involves just, you know, cutting your losses and starting a new case all over again.
Okay.
Some part of the strategy might even involve you going and taking some online classes and doing your master's degree online. So, you know, all kinds of things have to be thought of. It's not a simple answer that I can give you. But go ahead and get a second opinion. If your lawyers are competent, I mean, I'm surprised about the 3-year degree. Most lawyers know about this. You know, so I'm not sure what happened there, what was the thought process. But get a second opinion. Get somebody else involved.
Okay. All right. Thanks. So is it possible, if I get a PG from, like, some masters from India before this time, right, before the labor was filed, do they accept it or?
They will. They will.
Okay.
The thing, remember one thing, we have to be accredited. So accreditation is very important. If it is a U.S. degree through distance education, I have a video on that. You can go to immigration.com and see the video. Okay, on my blogs also I have the same video. So you need to see that. If it is from India, then it must be recognized by the Indian government.
Okay.
Okay. And if I were you, before, you know, spending 6-8 months, 1 year, 2 years on a new degree, I would double check with an evaluator and get an Crow Edge evaluation done to make sure that this degree would qualify.
Okay. So is there, like, that's what the Edge, right? Do you know of any evaluator, like, at any, at least get a second opinion? I would definitely talk to my lawyer and
there is no second. Three-year degree, you're wasting your time and money. They're not going to
Okay.
Is this a BCom?
Is this a
BSc? BSc, like in general sciences?
It's in Max, yeah.
Yeah, same as mine. Okay. Yeah, okay. No, that's not going to work.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Thanks, Rajiv.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let me get on to the next one. This is from our own neighborhood, 703, area code 703. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. My post is number 9, and it's about sending the wrong evidence.
The 485 wrong information, yes.
Right.
Not to worry. It's not going to kill you or anything. Don't worry. It can be saved. Just move quickly.
The problem, Rajiv, is my lawyer, the lawyer who's representing me, is a very stubborn man, and I got a response from him this morning. He said, since the receipt number for that is the same in the service database, it would reflect that your H-1 was valid from 2007 to 2010, and it's a harmless error. And then he goes on to say that, you know, for you, the Section 245A of the Immigration and Nationality Act applies, and under that provision, you remain eligible to as long as you've not been out of valid non for an aggregate period days, date of lost lawful admission, and which I am, and the documentation which has been sent.
Yeah, but, you know, my question is, when a client asks me that question, my answer is, what does it take for me to write a follow-up letter? It's a two-second job.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. But my question is, if he doesn't do it, can I do it myself?
You can. It's your case.
Okay.
I discourage it because if you have a lawyer, they should know what you're doing.
I will obviously, you know, talk to him and tell him if you don't do it,
yes,
then I will do it. I will tell,
yes,
him that if he doesn't,
yes,
do it, I'll do it. But
I like to take the path of least resistance. Simple reason. Look, what I'm doing is legal. What my client is asking me is legal. It gives my client some additional peace of mind. And I think it might even marginally help. In fact, in your case, I think it will help a lot. Why wouldn't I do it?
But, you know, Rajiv, like I said, he's a very stubborn man, and you know, I don't pay him. You know, he's paid by my employer, so he has less.
Stop right there. You know, to this day, I don't know who owes us what money, who is paying, who's not paying. A lawyer's job is to represent both sides no matter who pays them. The employer and the employee are equally my clients. If I am even 1% below loyalty from one to the other, I am not doing my job.
Okay? That's right. Yeah, that's right. And I'm very encouraged to hear that from you, Rajiv. But, you know, he doesn't think that way. And
well, the practical solution is very simple. You write the letter explaining the facts, whatever letter, you know, you need to write. Write a letter, explain the facts. Get it sent out to USCIS. Also call Customer Information Service yourself. Let them know this is what you want to do. And send a copy of it to your lawyer saying this is what I'm sending out, sir.
Rajiv, you know, just to wind this up, would it be okay if I just take the entire documentation that my lawyer sent to USCIS and then write a letter on top of it that, you know, I reviewed it and I missed this and I'm sending it as well?
It's unnecessary. A simple letter should do it.
Simple. It doesn't have to be on that orange sheet that they sent with RFE because
no.
A copy
no.
of RFE was sent to him.
No. That's why I want you to call the customer service. They will tell you the modality how to do it best.
Okay. All right.
Don't worry. It'll be okay. It's not going to be the end of the world. But do move on it. Don't just let it go. I think, again, you know, lawyers can have different opinions. In my view, the right thing to do is to inform USCIS.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you. Rajiv, one more thing. If I want to seek your help, you know, what would it cost me?
Why would you need my help if you can get it done free? Okay? So, you know, you're welcome to send me an email if there is any follow-up issues. But this is a simple matter, relatively speaking. Why do you want to pay money to us? I'll be happy to take your money. I love money. I enjoy money. But, you know, it's just, I'm not creating any value for you. If I was creating value, I would gladly take your money. This is something you can do yourself.
Yeah.
I will, of course. If you want us to, we'll do it. But my advice to you is no need. You have a lawyer. Everything else is working out fine. There's this one little mishap. You can correct it yourself. Just call USCIS customer service. And if there's still an issue, drop me a mail. Okay? Pradeep? Oh, I think I lost him. All right. Let me go on to the next caller. Area code 732. Go ahead, please. 732.
Hey. Hey, hi, Ajit. I think you briefly touched upon this subject. The firm audits relating to the location that recently started, I read somewhere that they've been issuing some audits regarding that location discrepancies. Do you have any more information about that?
There is no problem. This has been an issue going back to the year 1998. Because when the laws were enacted, there was no consideration given to this tremendously service-oriented economy where our real wealth in USA is people, not the materials you produce. So, give me 1 second, okay? I'm just trying to mute Pradeep. Okay, so this issue of relocation of employees, where the job is located, is a very, very tricky issue. And, you know, if the government is going to get unreasonable about it, then that's what the good lords made courts for. We will end up suing somebody over this. I'll tell you something. There is a very nice and very balanced opinion from Board of Alien Labor Certification Appeals. And if I remember correctly the name, I think it is Albert Einstein Medical Center. That opinion came out a few months ago, in which they analyzed in detail what permanent means, permanent, what a permanent job is. Okay? So some of these issues are so complex and so, in many ways, so easy also to deal with. Where is the job located? If somebody is going to move around, in 1998, Department of Labor said, we consider the job to be located in the corporate headquarters. Or put differently, that's where we want the recruitment to be done. Okay? So what you have to do is, you have to say in the ETA 9089 that this job is going to be, you know, job involves relocation, and then you have to, you know, basically make it clear to the Department of Labor and then advertise to the corporate headquarters. That's typically what we do in all our cases. Have we had issues? A couple of times. Never a denial. Two times we have had received this very silly little RFE which said, oh, you know, this job is not permanent. It's a consulting company. Never had a problem. We were able to meet all those things. Even the Department of Labor and the government knows that these laws are unreasonable and they are definitely out of time. Okay? So these are not, they are absolutely outdated laws, and we are dealing with them. That's just the way it is. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but I think that's what you're asking me, right?
Yes, that's what I was asking, yes.
So not to worry. These things can be taken care of.
No. Actually, I just read somewhere that, you know, that these kind of audits seem to be pretty new. They started issuing them very recently and things like that. So I just wanted to get your opinion on this. So.
I'll tell you this. Historically, I'm very proud to say, and, you know, look, I'm not falsely humble. Where I'm proud of something, I'll tell you. When I'm ashamed of something, I'll tell you. I'm not perfect. But historically, we have been ahead of the government thinking by at least 5 years. Every case that we have filed for the last 5 or 6 years has pre-thought this problem and how to deal with it. And I'm not the only one. Most lawyers who are dealing with this kind of work have thought their own solutions and they worked out their own ideas on how best to deal with it. So, you know, this kind of problem about where the job is located, what is a permanent job, this is a consulting company, all these things are normal occurrences within the overall labor certification process. We don't worry too much about it. We just deal with it one thing at a time. I received two very strange denials recently on the 9089, which completely changes the way the government looks at the 9089. We filed an appeal. I'm pretty sure we'll be okay. But the problem is these cases create a lot of anxiety. That's the problem with the Department of Labor and the USCIS. That's the problem when you don't have a written body of laws. They come up every morning with a new interpretation, and everything else that you've done before is wrong. Somebody loses 3 years of their life, they have no problem with it.
Right.
So, but I think we're going to be okay. This is not an insurmountable issue.
Right. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Let's see. Okay. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more calls. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes. Okay. Area code 347. Please go ahead. 347.
Hi. This is Moinak. My problem is that I did my master's from in US, and I will be graduating on 31st May 2012. And I got a job which starts from 5th July, and my company had filed my H-1B, and it got approved. And the H-1B will kick in from 1st October, right? So I have filed for my OPT, but unfortunately it got denied. So I'm still waiting for my denial letter and the reason behind it. Initially they sent me the denial letter, but the address given over there was wrong, so it went to some other address, and they are resending it again. And my college immigration officer told me that my service department denied my OPT. I don't know the actual reason until I get the letter. And he also told me that if I cannot refile my OPT, so I have to wait for the letter. And I can't stay in U.S. till 1st October. They have something called cap period before my H-1B kicks in. So on that basis, I am legally allowed to stay.
I would have to look at the law on that. I cannot comment about this offhand, unfortunately. The problem is this. CAP applies to those people who either already have an OPT or are waiting for their OPT decision. But what about cases where OPT is denied already? Does CAP still cover you? Okay. Now, I'm assuming that you did get an I-94 along with your H-1.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, actually, go ahead. Actually, my company lawyer had filed my H-1, so I only logged in and checked my record through, the receipt number that it gives you. So I hope my company lawyer has I-94.
You need to find out whether
an
I-94 has been issued for you or not. Because in my view, CAP may not be applicable when the OPT has been denied.
Okay.
So what is the best thing for you to do? Let's look at the course of action.
Mm-hmm.
The course of action, number one, is I want to find out whether your H-1 came with an I-94 or without an I-94.
Okay.
If it came with an I-94, you have two choices. Either continue to stay till October 1st. Is that legal? I don't know. Is that going to cause you any permanent problems? I don't think so. Okay.
Okay.
If it came without the I-94, you have to go outside for a visa stamping. No question about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it is. That's the lay of the land for you.
Okay. And also, I want to know, my address was, it was wrong over there. So is that the reason why my OPT got canceled?
Not sure. I cannot guess because I have no way of knowing. Were you at a university that has any legal problems with the government?
No, not at all. All of my friends have filed and they got their OPT. So
yeah, then I don't know what exactly is the problem. I really cannot comment. OPTs hardly ever get denied.
Yeah. So should I open for, should I wait till I get the reason and then probably reopen a case or something like that?
You should contact the USCIS customer service also, see if they can do something for you.
I have called them up. They say you have to wait till you get the denial letter.
Okay.
Probably they have that steps.
Well, actually, your focus should be the I-94 of the H-1 more than anything else.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. And one more thing. I have last question is that if I, once I get the reason, and if I, should I refile it or, should I reopen my case for, a consideration?
You cannot refile. There's a time limit.
There's
a time limit. I think you have to file an OPT within 60 days of the date you finish your coursework or something like that. There's a time limit. So you can't refile beyond that time, I think. But motion to reopen is always possible.
Okay. And reopen is generally faster than refiling, right? And
I don't know the answer to that question either.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately. Okay.
So and I'm also concerned. Should I try to hire a lawyer for me and try to handle this case? Or
well, how about this? Go find out what happened with your H-1.
Okay.
If you don't have an I-94, get yourself a lawyer.
Okay.
If you have an I-94, just talk to your company lawyer, see what they suggest.
Okay. I'll do that.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Area code 419. I have two more calls after that. So area code 419, go ahead, please. Area code 419. 419672. Okay.
Hello.
Yeah,
good afternoon, Mr.
Rajiv. Good afternoon.
My name is Sayed. Apologies because I couldn't have my post done. It didn't allow me to kick
That's
in.
That's okay.
So
we have time. So we can talk. No problem.
Okay. My issue is I'm on a student visa and over here having my graduate studies done. I got recently married in November, and my wife since then almost applied for an F2 visa three times in the Hyderabad consulate, and she got denied under 214B for different multiple reasons. The first time she was denied, it was she couldn't convince the consular officer. So second time we had more preparation done, and they said, you have insufficient funds, so all documents being appropriate as required by the university. And the third time she had applied recently in May 16th, I had some documents from my university, like the recommendation letter.
Hang on one second, Sayed Saab. You said she was denied under 214, right?
Yes, sir.
Isn't 214 the section that says you have immigrant intent?
Yes.
See, that section is impossible to overcome easily. What you need to do is, as soon as you convert to H1, send her for her H4.
Okay.
Because H4 does not have the 214B problem.
But then still, I have almost 3 semesters left for my graduation. That to complete around March of next year.
Okay.
So probably I had thought of, you know, 3 solutions for this. I've seen a couple of my friends also from different universities having their F2 visas rejected, but
right.
They applied it after 3 or 4 times and they got it. But then I would say it's pure luck in that case. What I decided was, like, if at all I go by them, I would definitely need your advice. Would you want me to try a different consulate in India, a different city, or you advise me to graduate early and, you know, file for it?
I would want you to apply for an H1, H4 combo as early as possible because that's the only thing that makes sense to me. F2, F1, these visas are very easy to deny because the government can take the position, the 214B, as you've seen. So I don't think I have a good answer for you for the 214B victory, but H1B, H4 combo, which is early graduation, seems to be a good way to go. You can start doing other things also if you want in the meantime. Keep applying. Can you go to a different consulate? You can, but would that help? I don't think so, but you can try. Doesn't hurt. Already they've
okay,
married
like,
two or three times. What else can they do? They can't shoot us.
I plan to graduate this November because the situation going around with me. So my OPT starts after that. So I think I have to apply for H1 until the next April. That's, again, going to take 1 year for me, though, to get the H1 approved.
Unfortunately, yeah, the April to October life cycle is there. She cannot come here.
Yeah.
Before September of
2013. And another thing I was thinking was, are there probably any chances, if at all, you know, she applies for a visitor visa for Canada and from there we try out something?
I would advise you not to do that because that looks too much like you are trying to get around the system. I don't want you to be in a situation where they say, oh, misrepresentation, fraud, permanent bar.
Okay.
No, I would rather have you wait 6 months extra than not being able to get her here at all.
Okay. So the only option I'm stuck up with over here, the bestest one, would be to graduate early. But then, again, it would be 1 year.
You can keep trying if you want in the meantime. You can keep trying.
It's too much of frustration.
I know. It's very frustrating. But counselors are very unreasonable. And they have created some very strange issues for many, many people. I agree with you there.
Yeah, my university had their recommendation letters also for her. Still, they didn't consider that.
I don't know what they are looking for. At one point of time, I actually got so frustrated. This was a couple of decades ago that I actually wrote a letter in which I had this line. I said, you know, short of the good Lord himself coming down and bearing witness, there is no better case for a student visa. I mean, this was somebody who was doing a PhD in economics from Penn State. She had gotten her full scholarship. She had been to USA 5 times as a journalist. She never had a problem. And they still denied her student visa, saying, oh, she's not going to come back. I said, you know, short of the good Lord coming down and testifying himself, there is no better case for a student visa.
Exactly.
You know, but they do things like that. We did get that approval, but that's very rare. That does not happen. Once they've denied the case, it's very difficult to get an approval. So I'm not encouraging you to hire a lawyer.
I don't need to hire anyone, you say.
Now, I would not advise it. I don't think that does much. But, you know, again, that's your choice. Personally, I mean, as a student, I know how difficult it was to make, enough money to even have a normal lifestyle or even a survival lifestyle,
yeah.
I would not want you to waste money. That's the way I see it.
Is there any other category she can apply for, a visitor visa or a student visa kind of?
No, there is no other category. If there were, I would have told you. Other than applying independently for an H-1 herself, nothing else.
Okay. That's what I thought. A few people recommended me for, you know, why don't you try for F-1? But I'm like, you know, she already applied for F-2, so they would have her
data
over there.
No, it's the same problem. F-1 is the same problem.
Exactly.
Okay?
Okay, sir. Thank you very much. Appreciate your answer.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Good luck, sir. Okay. Last question of the day, area code 704. Go ahead, please, 704.
Hello. I'm Bindu. Hi, Rajesh.
Yes, ma'am. Hello, Bindu. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I am on H-4 visa, and I applied for H-1, and it got denied. So will I be on H-4 status?
Yes,
status?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If you have applied for an H-1, and you were on H-4, and you have never done anything to violate your H-4, the fact that your H-1 is denied has absolutely no negative effect on your H-4. That continues as before.
Okay. And now, one more question I have. My spouse company is applying for my AOS.
Ma'am, I didn't hear that. What did you say?
My spouse company is applying, since the priority date for EB-3 is current for us, so my spouse company is applying for green card.
Okay.
So do I need to include this information, like the H-1 denial, or since I am on H-4, so I can just apply?
First of all, the fact that your H-1 was denied has absolutely no negative effect on you.
Okay.
The only time there's a negative effect is if you made some misrepresentation or did some fraud. You haven't done any of that. Okay? So
no,
the denial itself is no problem. I don't know what the forms ask. I don't remember the details of the forms off the top of my head. I don't believe the forms ask you about the H-1 denial. If they do ask you, say yes, no problem. If they don't ask you, don't say it.
They are just asking for the employment history. If you are not employed, then you the actual...
No problem. You don't have to reveal the H-1 then. So it depends upon the question on the form. What I would suggest is check with your lawyers who are helping you with the 485. I don't see any reason why you need to reveal any of that. And even if you did, it's not a problem. But, you know, double check with your lawyers, see what they suggest. I don't see any problem here.
Okay. Thank you, Rajesh.
Right. You're welcome. Folks, thank you all for being here. I will see you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.